This is our planet's hothouse, the jungle, the tropical rainforest. Forests like these occupy only 3% of the land, yet they're home to over half of the world's species. But how do so many different kinds of plants and animals find the space here to live alongside one another? On the dark, humid forest floor, the jungle appears to be lifeless. Often, the only signs of life are what you hear. A male bluebird of paradise is advertising for a mate. It's quite a performance, but he's not the only bird of paradise here keen to make an impression. There are nearly 40 different kinds on the island of New Guinea, each with a display seemingly more bizarre than the rest. A rifle bird of paradise. Like many jungle animals, birds of paradise avoid competing with each other, and these do so by living in different parts of this jungle-covered island. The six-plumed bird of paradise displays in his special clearing on the forest floor. The magnificent bird of paradise favours the low branches of bushes. His female is modestly dressed. The male has a good set of lungs, but he'll have to do more than flutter his eyelids if he wants to impress her. It'll all depend on his performance. The females may be dull-looking, but they're very picky. And it's time for a really close inspection. His right side looks fine, but what about his left? Pretty impressive, but is he magnificent enough? Oh dear, her departure says it all. Generations of choosy females have driven the evolution of these remarkable displays. The more extravagant a male is, the more likely he'll be noticed. New Guinea lies in a warm tropical belt that girdles our planet around the equator. With abundant rainfall and 12 hours of daylight, 365 days a year, it's here that rainforests flourish. Surprisingly, only 2% of the sunlight filters down to the forest floor. Down here, seedlings struggle to grow. But the gloom is not eternal. death of a forest giant is always saddening, but it has to happen if the forest is to remain healthy. The sudden blaze of sunlight will bring life to the forest floor. A single hectare of rainforest may contain as many as 250 species of tree. That's nearly 10 times the number that grow in Britain. And the thirst for light triggers a race for a place in the sun. There's no time to waste. A seed that may have fallen only a few days ago now bursts through the leaf litter. With so many competitors, getting a good start is critical. But each plant has its own particular strategy for making the most of this rare opportunity. The seeds of hardwoods are quick to germinate, but like the fabled tortoise, their strategy is to be slow and steady. Vines and other climbers put all their energy into rapid vertical growth rather than girth, though they'll need to be well supported. The climbers' strategy looks chaotic, but there's method in their madness. Their growing tips circle like lassos, searching out anchors for their spindly stems. They put coils in their tendrils so that if their support moves, they will stretch and not snap. But the front runners at this stage, the first to fill the clearing, are pioneers like the macarangas. Their immense leaves capture huge amounts of sunlight, so fueling their growth. As a result, the macarangas grow a remarkable 8 metres a year, surging ahead of almost all their rivals. In the race for the top spot, hundreds will start, yet few will ever reach the finishing line, their growth cut short by the diminishing light. In less than 4 years, the gap will have gone. But that's not the end of the race. The ultimate winners are the tortoises, the slow and steady hardwoods. When the short-lived pioneers have fallen, it's the hardwoods that take their place. And a 50-metre giant like this one may keep its place in the sun for another 200 years. At the top is the canopy, the engine room of the jungle. It's up here that most of the animal life in the rainforest can be found. But despite the apparent abundance of vegetable food, gathering it is seldom easy. With no real seasons, Each tree flowers or fruits at a different time of the year, which means that food is very widely spaced. Monkeys, like these tamarins, must search the canopy for all kinds of food if they're to survive. But across the world's rainforests, there's one type of fruiting tree that always delivers. The fig. Wherever they grow, figs are a magnet for a great diversity of animals. In the Amazon, the first to appear are the spider monkeys. These large primates are big fig eaters, but they won't have the tree to themselves for long. Others will want to share. Like the diminutive emperor tamarins. The tamarins love figs too, but being petite means they're easily scared off. Squirrel monkeys are also small, but they have strength in numbers. Their timeshare on the tree may be short, so their tactics are more smash and grab. Capuchin monkeys are the bully boys in these forests, and they want the ripe figs for themselves. Figs are one of the few trees that fruit the year round. So when other food is scarce, these fruits are always available somewhere or other. Even for leaf eaters like howler monkeys, the ripe figs are just too good to miss. And howlers are too big for the capuchins to chase off. Figs are so popular that as many as 44 different kinds of bird and monkey have been seen working a shift system on a single tree. Because fruiting trees are so valuable, many monkeys are territorial. And if you live in the treetops, there's perhaps no better way of staking your claim to a territory than this. The calls of the Siamang gibbons begin as a duet between the dominant male and female. The rest of their family soon join in, and it results in a frenzy of activity. The calls can carry over a mile, and their message is clear. They tell any neighbouring Siamangs, "This is our territory, keep out." Up here, the calls of Siamang gibbons seem to dominate the airwaves. But with the jungle's incredible diversity, there are countless others trying to be heard too. Every lair seems to beat to a different tune. In the early morning, the forest's chorus is particularly rich. Sounds travel further in the cooler air. But few calls can penetrate as far through the dense vegetation as this one, the deep bass solo of a male orangutan. In the middle of the day, little stirs in the jungle, and the hot, dense air muffles the sound. As the afternoon wears on, a different set of players begin to warm up. Insects work in harmony, timing their calls to fall between the notes of others. Many singers stick to precise schedules, and right on cue, the 6 o'clock cicada. Night brings out a whole new orchestra. The cacophony of competing calls seems deafening to us, but frogs' ears are tuned to hear only the calls of their own kind. The songs of courtship echo from all around. Male gliding leaf frogs leap from the treetops. To slow their descent, they use their huge webbed feet as parachutes. These large tree frogs spend most of their lives on the high canopy and only come down when it's time to breed. Once settled, they begin to serenade their unseen females. Now it's time for the females to make their move. There's no shortage of suitors, but this female has already made her choice. She's heading towards the loudest call, because loud calls come from big frogs, and big is best. But to reach him, she must run the gauntlet of a gang of smaller suitors. Their only chance of mating is to make a sneaky interception. He scored. But with more females arriving all the time, it's not over until the fat frog stops singing. Feet, so vital for gliding, are now put to other uses. Two's company, three's inconvenient. But in any case, all male frogs are equipped with dry thumbs, which enable them to get a vice-like grip on their moist partners. It's a case of first come, first served. Living in such a humid environment means jungle frogs are less tied to puddles and pools, and these even lay their eggs out of water. There's little chance of them drying out, and up here they're safer from predators. Surprisingly, it doesn't rain every day in a rainforest. But more still falls here than anywhere else on Earth. On average, over 2 meters a year. A single tree can suck up hundreds of tons of water each year. But the trees can't use all this water, so much of it returns to the air as vapor, forming mist and clouds. In the Amazon, the largest unbroken stretch of rainforest in the world, half of all the rainwater that falls comes from clouds produced by the trees themselves. With so much rain, it's not surprising that many of the world's largest rivers are found in rainforests. Inside the forest, the high humidity creates the perfect conditions for a strange world where life is built on decay. Amoeba-like slime molds cruise the surface, feeding on bacteria and rotting vegetation. Fungi also flourish on decay. These are the fruiting bodies of the fungi, the only visible sign of a vast underground network of fungal filaments. In temperate forests, the build-up of leaf litter creates rich stores of nutrients. That, however, doesn't happen here. Nutrients that reach the soil are leached out by the rain, but fungi are connected to tree roots by their underground filaments, and by quickly consuming the dead, they help to recycle crucial minerals straight back into the trees. And this recycling happens faster here than anywhere else on the planet. There are thought to be nearly a million different types of fungi in the tropics, the vast majority still unknown to science. But one thing's for certain. Without fungi, rainforests could not exist. Nothing goes to waste in a rainforest. The fungi become food for others, like these beetle larvae. Finding the fungus isn't a problem for the grubs, since their caring parents actually show them the way. Incredibly, 80% of all insects live in jungles. Few are more successful than the ants. There can be 8 million individuals in a single hectare. But jungle ants don't have it all their own way. These bullet ants are showing some worrying symptoms. Spores from a parasitic fungus called cordyceps have infiltrated their bodies and their minds. Its infected brain directs this ant upwards. Then, utterly disorientated, it grips a stem with its mandibles. Those afflicted, that are discovered by the workers, are quickly taken away and dumped far away from the colony. It seems extreme, but this is the reason why. Like something out of science fiction, the fruiting body of the cordyceps erupts from the ant's head. It can take 3 weeks to grow, and when finished, the deadly spores will burst from its tip. Then, any ant in the vicinity will be in serious risk of death. The fungus is so virulent, it can wipe out whole colonies of ants. And it's not just ants that fall victim to this killer. There are, literally, thousands of different types of cordyceps fungi, and remarkably, each specialises on just one species. But these attacks do have a positive effect on the jungle's diversity, since parasites like these stop any one group of animal getting the upper hand. The more numerous a species becomes, the more likely it will be attacked by its nemesis, a cordyceps fungus. With so much competition, jungles have become the home of the specialist. And this animal, in the island of Borneo, is one of the most unusual. It's a colugo, or flying lemur, though this is something of a misnomer, as it doesn't actually fly, and it certainly isn't a lemur. In fact, nobody's quite sure who its closest relative is. Colugo depends on a diet of young leaves, and to find enough of them, it must move from tree to tree. The leaves are not very nutritious, but then getting around doesn't use much energy. In a single night, a Colugo might have to travel as far as 2 miles, but that task is made easier by its superior gliding skills. The secret of success in the competitive jungle is specialising, and this has led to the evolution of some very intimate relationships between plants and animals. These are pitcher plants, also from Borneo. Adapted to living in very low nutrient soils, the pitcher plant gets most of its nourishment from insects lured to nectar glands on the underside of the lids. Once on board, the waxy sides of the pitcher ensure there's little chance of escape. Most slip to a watery grave. At the bottom of the pitcher, glands secrete enzymes which help to digest the corpses, so feeding the plant. But not all visitors have a fatal attraction to the pitchers. The red crab spider spends its entire life in the pitchers, hanging on with threads of silk. Instead of building a web, it relies on the water-filled pitcher to trap its food. When an ant falls in, the spider simply waits for it to drown, and then abseils down for a spot of fishing. Alive, this ant would be far too dangerous for the spider to tackle, so using the pitchers as traps means it can get bigger meals. And the spider doesn't rob the pitcher of everything. The digested remains of its booty will end up in the water, providing instant food for the plant. Other food, like mosquito larvae, seems to be out of reach, but the spider has another surprising trick. By taking its own air supply trapped in a bubble, the crab spider can actually dive to the very bottom of the pitcher. Once the prey is captured, the spider hauls itself back up its silken safety line. The pitcher is a one-stop shop for this spider, but it's not alone. In the jungle, there's competition for everything, even a small water-filled pitcher plant. Such specialists create the jungle's remarkable diversity. But finding enough food to survive is so challenging that most animals living here tend to be small, though there are exceptions. This is the Congo in Africa. It's a vast wilderness and the least explored of all jungles. From up here, the forest looks similar to the ones that grow in the Amazon or Southeast Asia. But down below, there are some unexpected sights. Crisscrossing this forest are countless miles of highways, and they were made by something big. Forest elephants roam great distances in their search for food, but to survive, they must emerge from the gloom of the forest. And clearings like this one are a magnet for elephants from far and wide. These elephants live in much smaller groups than their savanna cousins. This might be the first time that one group will have seen another for a month. For the adult males, it's a welcome break in an otherwise largely solitary existence. They're not the only animals attracted to the clearing. Forest buffaloes and Red River hogs are also regular visitors, as are bongos, which are very difficult to see outside these clearings. All these large forest animals have come here to collect an essential element of their diet that lies buried beneath the mud. And the elephant's trunk is the perfect tool for reaching it. To get what they seek, the prospecting elephants must first blow away the covering layer of silt. Satisfaction at last. They're collecting a particular kind of clay that contains vital minerals scarce in their natural diet. It may be mud, but there's just nothing quite like it for enriching the blood. The clay also helps to absorb the toxins found in many leaves that the elephants eat. There are other benefits to coming here. These clearings are the only places where the forest elephants can get together in such numbers. When they return to the forest, they will have to go their separate ways once more. If large animals are rare in jungles, then groups of large animals actually living together are even rarer. this posse of hunters is not only formidable, it's also very large. In their search for food, chimpanzees move effortlessly between the forest floor and the canopy. They're one of the few jungle animals able to do so. Figs are a vital part of a chimpanzee's diet, and some just can't seem to get enough of them. But there's something special about this stretch of forest in Uganda. Fruit is actually abundant. And a lot of food supports lots of chimps. At 150 strong, this community of chimps is the biggest yet found in Africa. Their numbers are so large that they need a big territory, lots of fig trees, and they're willing to fight for it. These calls announce the start of a raid into land controlled by their neighbours. As they leave their core zone, the patrol goes silent, occasionally stopping to listen. Signs of the enemy are detected and examined closely. Chimp militia are now at the very edge of their territory. All need to be on maximum alert. They must wait and listen. An unfamiliar chimp call raises the tension. It's an uncertain time. The size of the rival group is as yet unknown. Not far away, their neighbours are feeding in a fig tree, oblivious to the approaching dangers. The patrol moves off with a sense of purpose. They must remain silent until they close in on their rivals. The attack is on. To intimidate their opponents, the aggressors scream and drum on buttress roots. Several males corner an enemy female. It's a ferocious attack, and she's lucky to escape with her life. Ah! others are not so fortunate. The battle won, a grisly scene unfolds. An enemy youngster has been caught and killed. The carcass is shared between members of the group and eaten. Killing a competitor makes sense if you want to protect your food supply. But exactly why they cannibalize the dead chimp is not fully understood. It may simply be a chance for some extra protein. Teamwork has brought this group of chimps great success, but they'll soon reach the limits of their power. The competition for resources ensures that no one species dominates the jungle. The rainforest's great diversity has come at a cost. It has made them the most finely balanced ecosystems in the world, only too easily upset and destroyed by that other great ape, the chimpanzee's closest relative, ourselves.